Hey everyone, this is Steven. Welcome in this new episode of my podcast. Just like the past two times, I'm giving you the opportunity to listen to a full webinar that I've recently done together with Hello Customer. I got interviewed by their CEO, Leslie Cotogne. And this time, in this third episode of our series, we talked about extreme customer centricity in your processes. We talked about the back end of customer experience, and that's a bit out of the comfort zone, and it's a very challenging domain, and we got some really, some very complex questions, and I think that we had a very relevant discussion about these topics. So I want to give you the opportunity to listen to this full webinar that I've done together with Hello Customer. I hope you will enjoy it.
Hello there. Welcome back to the third and last session of this webinar series. It's already the last session, Stephen. Time really flies,
eh?
Yeah, I know. So in the first two webinars, we talked about extreme customer centricity and customer service. And the second one, we talked a lot about product and service design.
Yes.
Today, we're going to tackle a subject that it's not really our comfort zone, is it? When we talk about back-end processes and employee engagement and change management. Why are processes so often overlooked when we talk about CX?
I'm maybe going to give a strange answer to this one, Leslie. I think there's too much focus on processes.
Okay.
Yeah. Of course, you need a good process to help a customer to fulfill a certain expectation. But if there are too many companies that today believe that customer centricity equals having a good process in place.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't believe that. I think the process is the minimum requirement. If you have to move someone from, let's say, location A to location B, getting them there is just the process. How they feel during that experience is what the real customer experience is. Bringing a plate as a waiter from the kitchen to the table is just the process. How you make people feel while you put the plate on the table, that's what the real customer experience is about. So it's about figuring out how you can build on top of the process and really understanding that the process itself is not enough for a good customer experience.
Yeah, I think I agree on that, but there's a nuance in what you're saying, because the people who are responsible for designing the processes, if they don't do it with that mindset of customer experience and customer centricity, then they start from within. We have a very good example. Our new chief customer officer was actually one of our customers at a very large shoe retailer in Belgium. That was Brantano. Of course, they don't exist anymore. But she was then explaining that when it goes wrong in processes is that, for example, the return process in e-commerce. The process starts in the heads of people designing processes the moment the package arrives back at the warehouse. But the process should start from the moment the customer receives the package.
Mm-hmm.
And then it should be looked at from aligning all the channels where you contact the company up to how can I as conveniently as possible return that package. And then all the questions that we've also answered in the previous webinars, you know, value versus conversion and then the relevance and also what you said about opposing conflicts of interest, for example, do you return for free or not? We need to get that thinking into the people who design processes, no?
Yeah, absolutely. It's about building the process from a point of view of the customer and not from your point of view.
Yeah.
And that will also help you to better understand why things go wrong. If you return your shoes, you have to make sure that that can be done as convenient as possible. But the step before that is understanding why are they returning the shoes? Is it because it was intentionally that they ordered 5 pair of shoes to keep one? Or is it because it was a wrong order? Is it because the color online is different than what you have in real life? What is their motivation? Is for me also part of understanding that process, because if you understand that, that will help you to better, you know, install the rest of the process to make it as convenient as possible for the specific situation that customer is in.
Yeah. So we talked about in the first webinar, we talked about customer service and how they are or should be the expert center or the expertise around the customer lies there. And they have so much knowledge about things that go wrong upstream or downstream in the processes. If you have a problem with your billing, for example, I am, of course, also a telco customer, and I wanted to change something in my subscription. And I could do that via WhatsApp, which was amazing. And cool. The person that was chatting with me was also amazing. And then they said, no problem. We will change your subscription and it will go down. And then the next time I got my invoice, it didn't go down. I chatted again with that person. Again, it was a very nice encounter. Next month, my invoice did not go down. We are 6 months further. My invoice has not go down yet. So we were talking about having customer service maybe more at the forefront or at the center of the company, but what about all these people in the backend processes and supply chain? How can we make sure that they too, that they learn from what is happening, why customers are calling customer service, and really fixing those issues?
Yeah, and it's often, I think what happened with you with WhatsApp is that they started an experiment to deliver customer service through WhatsApp, probably as a standalone initiative, which is
probably, yeah,
a good initiative, but yep, then it's not linked back to the entire system. So your account information didn't change. And of course, you can do all kind of cool things, but at the end of the day, it's the final delivery that is always part of your experience. I mean, if you are in e-commerce, the website can be wonderful, but if the product never arrives, yeah, then there is, yep, no experience. If you take an Uber and they drop you off at the wrong place, then it can be the most friendly driver in the world. So I think the process should make sure that what actually needs to be delivered as a service is their core focus.
Yeah.
Making sure that you deliver as promised. And it's very often about expectation management.
Yeah. Okay.
The moment when you chat with a person in WhatsApp about your invoice, and that's a really friendly conversation,
and they tell me it's going to be fixed,
and then your anticipation is that will be fixed because it was such a great experience with that person. If it fails, then you're starting to doubt the qualities of that person you talked with. So they lose their entire impact,
yeah,
of being friendly. They did a good job, but they lose the impact because of the delivery that wasn't in place. And that often happens when the processes aren't installed in a proper way.
Yeah. Looking at the other side or the flip side of processes, we discussed it already briefly before that, like you said, a good process is kind of almost the fundament of a good customer, mm-hmm, experience. But when can we go overboard on the other side that processes are actually hindering customer experience, are hindering people to do the right thing?
I had so many experiences where processes were terrible as a customer. And I know how it goes. You have a team of people that are far away from the customer and they develop the process. They think, okay, this is going to be the customer journey and this is how we're going to install it. And then a customer comes in, and if they follow that process and if they ask the right question, then there's
everything,
no problem.
It's like a chatbot.
Yeah, it's fine. Then it's, yeah, perfect. If you walk in and you ask a question that is different than what they're used to and different than that the things that are mentioned in the process, then the problems start to rise. I had this experience a couple of times in San Francisco. I organize, as you know, inspiration tours with our company Nextworks to Silicon Valley and to China and to all kind of other places. And as you know, I value the concept of wining and dining quite a lot.
Yes.
Want my clients that join me to have a good time. I want them to give good content, but at the end of the day, you need to have a good dinner with a nice glass of wine.
We're Flemish, of course.
Yeah, it's important. So, and I have this tradition, and the finance team at Nextworks doesn't like this, but I have this tradition when I walk into a restaurant and when you come with a group, it's like private dining is what they call it, and you made a pre-reservation of everything. And I understand that because it's a group of 30 people. But then I come in and I see the wine and I think, yeah, I want to upgrade the wine. That's my first reflex. So I go, yeah, to the maître and I tell him, this is good wine, but I would like to have better wine for my group. In 50% of the cases, they're like, no, sir, that's impossible. And then I say, why it's impossible? I'm paying the bill and I would like to have other wine. And I say, no, this is the one that you reserved up front. And then I tell him, yeah, but maybe you don't understand me. The end result will be that you guys make more money, because I'm going to have better one.
Yeah, you want to upgrade.
I want to upgrade. Yeah. And half of the times it's not possible because the script says that you made a pre-reservation of wine and you cannot change that. And for me, even if they then do everything perfect afterwards, for me, it's kind of disappointment. I'm like, can't you guys be more flexible? You have a customer that asks something that is perfectly possible. Those bottles weren't opened yet. You have a basement with other bottles.
But you feel unheard.
I feel unheard. I feel unhelped. And they follow the process. So the biggest danger of these customer journey mappings and, you know, in greatest detail describing all these processes is that you become too rigid.
Yeah.
And that you think that if you leave the process that you're actually doing a bad job. And very often that's just the opposite. So you need to maintain that human flexibility in there, because if you don't have the human flexibility, you may as well replace the humans by robots. They're much better in following processes than humans. But you need humans that have that mental flexibility to adapt the process in favor of the customer when it's necessary to do so.
Well, it's really balancing out process and empathy. It needs to go hand in hand. And I can't remember which airline it was.
Do you remember where this guy is being pulled through the aisle?
United Airlines.
United Airlines, exactly. Where then the CEO on national TV says we really didn't have a process for that, for being empathic.
Yeah.
And then I was like, this is mind-blowing, really.
It's mind-blowing. We don't have a process to be empathic.
Yeah.
You cannot have a process to be empathic. It's about having a mindset that people, your employees, feel safe to be flexible and empathic.
Yeah. But probably, being supported by a process. Yeah.
Probably the waiter that didn't want to upgrade my wine in the past had a situation where he or she adapted the menu or the drinks to what the customer asks and got negative feedback from the management that said, no, this is what we agreed. Now I have to change the invoice. It's extra work for me.
Yeah.
Since then, they're like, no, we're not changing it. It's not that human doesn't want to help me. It means that human doesn't feel safe
to
help me.
Yeah.
And that's a big difference.
Yeah. It reminds me of when I moved in the Christmas holiday. I moved and there was a moving company that helped me. And when we arrived at the new house, I have this laundry washer, and they didn't want to put it in.
Okay.
And I was like, but this thing is really heavy for me to put it in and to kind of connect it and
of
make
course.
Sure that it works. And they were like, no, but I felt with every question I asked the man, he felt really uncomfortable and not really happy. Because I asked him, can you put this closet together? Can you do this? Can you do that? And they were like, I really want to help this lady, but we're not allowed to. And finally, he kind of like broke. And he told his guys, okay, we're going to help this lady out. We're going to connect the washer. We're going to put this furniture together. And then I said, but why didn't you want to do it before? And he said, you know, I've been doing this job for 20 years. And I used to do it with pride and with joy because I'm helping people. But then since there's risk mitigation, there's legal stuff, so we're not allowed to do anything anymore.
Wow.
Because of all these processes and risk. And I felt really sorry.
It's
because,
terrible.
Again, there it's the balance that kind of crossed to...
Yeah,
to
absolutely. Because I have this naive belief that almost every employee, almost every human gets positive energy from helping out others.
Yeah.
Most people have good intentions. When you do a job, you want people to be happy with what you do. And if people are unhappy, that doesn't make you happy either. You want to have that positive energy. And if you work in an organization where you feel that someone is not helping the customer in the way that, you know, makes most common sense to do, probably they are not feeling safe enough to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Or processes have been built to kind of hinder.
Yeah, and they feel doing a good job is following the process, and it creates strange situations.
Yeah. Customer feedback can help, of course, in adding value across the chain, and probably and even more with people who are not interfacing with customers on a regular basis. But there's lots of pros and cons in customer feedback, as we are, of course, aware.
Yeah.
Do you think feedback is overrated?
No, on the contrary. But I meet a lot of people in the business world that believe that customer feedback is overrated.
Mm-hmm.
And they always share the same quote at that moment. Do you know which quote they share?
Henry Ford.
The horses. Huh? If I would have asked people what they wanted, they would say faster horses. They didn't know that I could make a car. So because of that, don't ask for feedback for your customers. And there are a lot of people who think that asking feedback from a customer means that then you have to implement everything the customer
says.
Literally.
Yeah.
That's not the case. For me, customer feedback is not about micromanaging all the small details that they bring in. There may be some good suggestions, and then it's a smart thing to listen to that. But the real challenge with customer feedback is to understand what people really want, to understand what brings value, and then you figure out a way how you can deliver that value. With Henry Ford, people basically just want to go from place A to B in a faster way.
Exactly, yeah.
That's the need. They don't have to come up with the solution. It's your job to come up with the solution. But if you know the need, it will help you to evolve in the right direction. So you absolutely need customer feedback. And it's a myth that asking people what they want means that you have to execute everything that they say. That's not what this is about.
But you need to read between the lines and then translate it into something that is valuable.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. I want to come back to what we were just talking about, you know, the balance between processes and employee engagement and empathy. Knowing customers at scale, empowering employees to do things. Do you know or do you know companies that leverage their customers' data so good that it helps employees to do better? That it's tailored to employees, like, for example, customer service agents, so that they can help the customer better and add value?
Yeah, absolutely. The main trend that I see in customer care and data is that behind the scenes, you feed customers with data.
Yeah.
And they use that data to improve the service. And that can be done in a contact center where they are being helped by automated replies, or where the system can read or understand the emotion that the customer has. All those tools exist, and it's technology, it's data that helps people to do a better job. That's one thing. Another thing is in the field, not in a contact center. Okay. I think we need to support people in the field to do a better job. You know what when I go to a hotel, you know what the question is that I hate the most when I go in? Is this your first time here?
Think about it.
Every time when you go to a hotel, not every time, but 80% of the times, they will ask you, welcome in the hotel. Is this your first time here?
Yeah, you feel so unknown at that moment, especially if you go there very often. Yeah.
They shouldn't be asking the question. Yeah. They should know. And you cannot expect the employee to remember every face, but you need a simple data system behind the scenes that they can say, Leslie, good to have you back, and we have your favorite room for you.
Yeah.
Or say, Stephen, we believe this is the first time that you're one of our guests. We want to welcome you. And is there anything specific that we can help you with? Yeah. Then I'm like, oh, wow, these guys know this, and I'm feeling welcome. And I think one of the best examples of an organization that is doing this on a massive scale is Disney. In Disney World.
Okay.
In Disney World, they had the Magic Bands for almost 5 or 6 years now. And it's still a brilliant system because the Magic Band is like a bracelet that you get when you walk in. And it helps you to get through the park in a more convenient way. But it's also a data collecting tool. They know which rides you prefer. They know when it's your birthday. They know what your name is. They know if it's the first time in the park. They know all the things you bought. And every employee in Disney World has access to a small screen out of sight of the customer.
Yeah.
And that screen tells them what your name is. The screen tells them in which hotel you're staying. The screen tells them if you're a first timer or a regular, if you have a annual subscription there. They will know if it's your birthday.
So they can actually personalize.
They can personalize it. They can say, oh, Leslie, you're here with your little boy and it's his birthday today. Congratulations. And then the child will be
like, wow.
How do you know? Well, everyone knows you're our guest and we want to give you a special day today. And some people may argue, isn't that too much for in privacy? You can select when you go to Disney World if you want to turn off the data thing.
Okay.
So that they don't do it. The percentage of people that turn off the data thing is lower than 2%.
Well, because they perceive the value, of course.
Of course, they love it that people say, oh, you're back. Good to have you back. Or it's your first time. We're going to help you. This right. You have to do it like this or this. They see the value. And it doesn't feel like it's Big Brother's watching you. You always have the feeling, wow, they have employees here that know their job. These guys are doing an outstanding job. And that's the feeling that you get. So people love it.
Yeah. And they then also feel empowered and wow, because they are doing a great job. And that, again, adds to their own engagement as well.
And they see the smiles on the faces. Yeah. They see the positive surprises.
Upward spiral.
It's a positive spiral.
Yeah. That's a very, very inspiring example, actually.
Yeah. I love it. I've been there multiple times, as you know. And every time I'm like, wow, this system works really wonderful.
Yeah. Okay. So, Stephen, there's a question that we received that has nothing to do with processes, but it's to do with the previous question we received from the same person.
Okay.
That, okay, we talk about customer service and we talk about products and the processes, but there's one thing we don't talk about and that has a substantial effect also on customer experience, and it's, you know, the power of branding and marketing.
Okay.
And I like that approach, so I thought, you know what, let's build it into our final webinar.
Very good.
As a surprise for you. How do you see marketing and branding playing a role in that whole customer experience approach?
There, sometimes it feels like there are two sides of the story. There's customer experience and there's brand experience.
Yeah.
And in many organizations, there are different people who are responsible for brand experience and for customer experience. It seems like they have a different assignment, they have different KPIs,
different
everything's
goals,
different,
yeah.
different goals.
Yeah.
They hardly talk with each other in some organizations, which is very strange because for us as customers, there's only one experience, right?
Yeah.
And I think the challenge is to bring those two together, brand experience, customer experience, that they reinforce each other. And the brand experience is about telling the dream, sharing the dream. What is this brand all about? What do they do? What do they stand for? What kind of cool things do they have in place for me?
Yeah.
And then customer experience is the evidence that the dream is a reality. And they prove that the dream happens over and over and over again in a very consistent way. The customer experience happens every time that something from an organization touches the market or touches a customer.
Yep.
And that's very broad. That's the contact center, but that's also the amount of waste that you put in the environment. It's the product experience, it's the packaging experience. That all is customer experience. And you feel if everything that they told you is true or not true. And because of that, those two should merge. Successful organizations that I work with today, they merge the two. They have the teams of customers and branding come together. And very often it's very superficial. Very often customer experience is working on contact centers and brand experience is working on advertising and mass communication.
Yeah.
Even those two are too limited. It's much more than that.
Yeah.
So looking at it from the broadest point of view and understanding that for the customer, there's only one experience is crucial to become really customer centric.
Yeah, I think when I hear all of that, there's one brand that comes to mind. It's Nike.
Nike, yeah. Nike
yeah.
is a very good one.
Yeah.
Nike does that. They tell us a story. And when you go to their stores, when you get their products, it's always
it.
The same thing.
Yeah.
You feel it when you touch their products that their story is a reality.
Yeah.
And bringing that together is something that Nike does in a fantastic way.
Yeah. I was listening to a podcast with their CEO.
Okay.
And he was talking about how and why he said yes to being the CEO of Nike because he was on the board before. I can't remember his name. Sorry about that. And he was talking about how the purpose of Nike, the mission of Nike, bringing people together with sports. And if you then see the commercials they put out there in times of the pandemic, it was so powerful how they connected people, how they, you know, through sports and exactly and really tapping into the emotions of people. It was, yeah.
Yeah, I think a lot of people got goosebumps because of that. It was very, very impressive to see.
Yeah, it was extremely powerful. But I think as you were explaining it, branding and customer experience need to come together, that's exactly what they
do. It's the flagship example of that.
Yeah, yeah. That's why it's my favorite brand. And then, you know, also related to marketing and also personalization and so forth, we often get questions also about different demographics, you know, Generation X, Y, Z. How do we approach them, both in customer experience and branding? Is there a different approach to them? How should companies go about that?
There are different arguments there. Some people really think that we're talking about a new generation and that they should be addressed in a very specific way. I've seen a lot of research lately that the gap between generations has never been smaller than today.
Mm-hmm.
And something strange is happening. In the past, you had people that were like the parents and they were the leading role and example. And then the young people follow them. Now it's like the opposite. Young people discover TikTok and suddenly a year later, hey, I'm 40 plus and I'm on TikTok.
Yeah.
So we follow the behavior of children. So the gap between generations is decreasing. And sometimes we make the wrong assumptions. Like last week, I saw a piece of research about the expectations of the youngest generation in terms of housing and living in Europe here. And everyone thinks, oh, these guys want to live in a small apartment, maybe share it, co-housing initiatives and all that. No. They just want to have a standalone house with a garden in a very quiet area.
Like everyone else and all generations before.
Like their parents have. And that became even more important to them because of the pandemic, because they felt like, you know, if I'm locked up in this small room, that's not what I want. I want to have a garden. I want to sit outside. That's what I want to do. So we see a new trend and then we link it to that young generation and we think, oh, that's for the young generation.
Yeah.
I don't think that's true. We need to be very, very careful by just making these overgeneralized conclusions.
Yeah, it reminds me of the whole digital transformation, especially you see it in financial institutions where they're like, oh, but we need to do everything digital now and with apps because, you know, young people want to have everything digital. And then I had Inge Ampe of Argenta in this chair as well last year. And she was telling about how at Argenta, they really try to make an effort to know what these customers, these people are, you know, what drives them in their lives. And what they figured out is that these young people, they really don't know a lot about finance stuff. And they're also pretty anxious about it. You know, how can I manage my money right? And they really would like to have a personal advisor, but they had more difficulty kind of finding their way to the branch.
Yeah.
And then they figured out it's not just about delivering the digital tool because they don't know what to do with it. Mm-hmm. They're scared to use it. So we need to bring in and we need to bring them together. And that's why she was explaining we need to be a hybrid bank also for the younger generation.
Yeah,
and then,
great example. Huh?
Yeah.
You would assume young people don't want to talk to a human, but when it's important to them, when it's a little bit scary or emotionally loaded, then you like to talk to a human.
Yeah absolutely. Yeah. Okay. So, Stephen, we're reaching the end of this session. And we're reaching the end of the series, which makes me very sad because this was a lot of fun. So now it's time for my favorite question. You know what that one
is,
right?
I know it up front, yeah.
Yeah. So how to prove financial return to the board?
Oh, how to prove financial return to a board. I could share a story now, Leslie, about saying that you need to make an Excel sheet and that you will prove that by investing in your contact center, that churn will decrease and those
with
kind of
X
things.
With X percent, yep.
Yeah. But you know that I have difficulties with that because I've seen too many organizations where the person who's making the Excel sheet is reverse engineering the Excel sheet. They know what the outcome is, what they want to prove, and then they make sure that the data is proving that to them. So I have difficulties with that. I think that if you want to talk about customer experience, there are two things in terms of measurement. Of course, you hope for short-term results. When I look at my business, my dream is to give presentations in more international locations than what I can do today, and that I'm more seen as an international source for inspiration for CX. And I hope, of course, in the short run that I will feel that. That's one thing. But I think what's more important, and there are not enough companies who are doing that, is to set up a belief of what you need to do to get there, to achieve that dream, without having short-term expectations.
Okay.
If you start to build a customer experience strategy without short-term expectations, it will be much stronger than when you only focus on the short-term results, because it will create a vision that goes further than what you do today. And it will create a behavior that will go further than what you do today. And the decisions that you make will not be focused on what do I need to decide today to achieve this short-term result, but it will be based on, is this investment helping me to achieve the long-term result? So going into customer expectations without short-term expectations is for me the most powerful way to create value for yourself and for your organization.
Yeah, and maybe send them on inspiration tours or safaris to those companies that are actually doing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Thanks, Stephen. This was a blast.
It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me 3 times at Hello Customer. It's always fun with you guys.
Yeah, maybe we'll have a season 3.
Would be great.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and we hope to see you soon.
Thanks, guys. Bye. Thanks.